CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Daniel Franklin of The Economist magazine, the executive and diplomatic editor correspondent, to speak of Zoom meetings or Microsoft meetings in the virus for diplomacy. Daniel, a very good evening to you. Your presentation about Zoom took me immediately to a memory of the Versailles Treaty and diplomacy. The Versailles Treaty, when Wilson arrived back after his brief jaunt in February back home, and then he came back to France, he was offended right away when there weren't large crowds to greet him, and then more offended when he realized that the French had given him a much smaller residence in Paris to conduct the rest of the treaty. If I read your presentation correctly about diplomats, all of that would have been avoided, and the world would be changed today, Daniel, if we'd had Versailles under Zoom meetings. Is this a revelation, or were diplomats always aware that getting together introduced risks into conversations that could be avoided in some fashion? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thank you very much for having me, John. Well, I don't know whether we can completely rewrite history and say that Versailles might have been a better treaty had it happened virtually. That might be going too far. Although one thing, I think it might have been a slightly more inclusive treaty, because it just is easier to bring more people in remotely, and you're able to do a number of things that you can't do physically. But at the same time, you do lose something as well. You lose that personal chemistry and the kind of rapport you can build up in person.
I want to tell another anecdote I remember from the late Cold War. George Shultz was Secretary of State, and there was much ado in the press about how when he went to Moscow, he had to have his meetings inside a special trailer that was sealed from outside snooping inside the embassy grounds. All of those snooping stories, they're wonderful, you know, dropping a wire down inside the embassy and fixing the chimney and listening through other rooms, the James Bond stuff. All of that goes away with virtual. Is that something that's being observed, that security is now easier to do because you can either seal your lines or know that you're not being snooped by the wrong actors? Have they discussed security?
Well, I think security is actually a concern for this, that there are certain things that people are hesitant to say over a video link or over a link that can be recorded in that way. So I wouldn't chalk security up as one, or greater security as one of the benefits of virtual diplomacy. Almost the opposite. There are some things that I think diplomats are only comfortable passing in person and away from other officials, sometimes in the privacy of a, you know, famous walk in the woods, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that I think you actually find that there's investment going on right now, certainly in some foreign ministries, in security to upgrade these kinds of platforms for diplomatic use, because they know that they're going to be used more and more, and they want to be satisfied that they can be more secure than they have been up until now.
Our friends in Russia, I see, still invest a deal in physical presence. They insist that Security Council meets in person.
That is out of concern for security, I should say. You know, yes. They worry partly, I mean, it's partly going by the book, you know, these things are supposed to be in person, but partly because they fear that their fake identities could happen over virtual links. So voting or discussions in Security Council, particularly discussions or sessions, are only actual formal sessions if they're in person.
So the idea of diplomatic Zoom has limits, but let's discuss what you identify are the discoveries. First of all, the tools. How does virtual reality work for the diplomats?
Well, to some extent, this has speeded up, as in many other areas of the pandemic, I think, speeded up things that might have happened anyway, but they're just happening faster. So when you can't travel easily, has been obviously been the case during the pandemic, people get creative, so they've got more creative about reports from the field back to the Security Council, for example. And they've used virtual reality or immersive storytelling techniques to say, here's what it's like in this particular conflict zone. There was one that was produced, I think, called Iraq 360. And there's a unit within the UN which has been keen to pioneer this sort of thing. And I think their hope, and I think there's some chance of this happening, that this starts to become part of the standard toolkit of this sort of operation, that instead of having dry reporting on pages of paper, you start to get a much more immersive, realistic experience, or virtually realistic experience, reported from the field, and perhaps people even giving their reports live from the field in a way that hasn't in the past happened.
You've also noted that the diplomats in general, speaking of these matters, have seen productivity improve. How so?
Well, in some respects, enormously, because, of course, you know, if you take someone like President Biden or his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, you can whiz around the world without ever leaving the office or the White House or the State Department. So you can, as President Biden did, you can attend a meeting of G7 leaders on a morning in February, and then Tony Blinken last week did a cyber tour of Africa, had summit meetings with a couple of prime ministers and foreign ministers. All this would be far more onerous to do, and in some cases impossible geographically to do it in such a quick space of time, if you had to do it physically.
I see there could be problems. Clemenceau would have been all over the world all the time. We'd never get rid of the old man. Now, when we come to the major discovery you make is inclusivity. What is that, and how has that helped with Zoom meetings and conflict?
Inclusivity has been a sort of buzzword now for a long time, particularly in the kind of conflict resolution field, where people have realized that it's not enough often just to have a few people at the top of a process, a few foreign countries at the top level, and a few high representatives of often rather unsavory people getting together and stitching up a deal. Much better if you can have far wider engagement and involvement of broader swathe of society. So young people involved, women's groups involved, local politicians, mayors, that kind of thing. But that's very hard to arrange in the physical world. You've got to get people physically together in a safe place to have proper talks, often quite expensive, often in a third country, places like Geneva or Stockholm and so on. And the numbers are still going to be fairly limited. But using virtual platforms of various sorts, and it's not just new views and teams, it's some purpose-built platforms that the UN has adapted for what they call digital dialogues, you can involve hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And the benefit of that is you not only feed in the views of far more people into a process, you can feed back genuine opinion from a wider representative group of society. Once people feel that they've taken part in that process, it gives it a greater sense of legitimacy and a greater chance of any agreement sticking if you actually reach an agreement.
And the most sensitive talks, I think we've already spoken about the fact that that requires a physical presence. Do all the diplomats say that we really can't do hard negotiating by Zoom? Is that a comment?
Yes, I think it's much harder to do the really difficult stuff over Zoom. So you can be much more productive, to use the word you rightly used, I think, on the kind of fairly standard stuff where, for example, the other day, you have leaders from 40 countries or so coming together for a climate summit that President Biden convenes, reading out their statement. You don't necessarily need to get together physically for all that. That can be done very efficiently virtually. But if you want to hammer out differences, thrash out hard agreements, that's when you really often need the kind of late night sessions in – side rooms. You need the breaks, the corridor conversations. You need to understand the body language of the other side much more, and you need to get almost the exhausting process of diplomacy to eventually reach an agreement. And if you think of, for example, what happened at the Paris climate summit in 2015, you know, hammered out after many of these sort of almost locked into rooms conversations, that's much, much harder to do over a virtual link, especially if you're struggling with the, as at times people do, with the poor connections and technology glitches.
Daniel Franklin is the executive and diplomatic editor for The Economist magazine. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.